So I want you to think about the two nearest neighbors that are either living in the house next to you on your left or your right. If you live in an apartment, maybe the folks that are on the other side of the hall or the other apartment close to you. Or if you're a student, maybe the person that's nearest you with the locker that's by you by chance. So think about those two homes, left to you or to the right, maybe across the street, the two closest neighbors you have. So here's the question I want to ask you. If both of those two families in those homes, if both of them attend worship regularly, and when I say regularly, I'm going to say at least a couple times a month, if both neighbors on both sides of you or either side of you, if they both come to some kind of a worship service regularly, raise your hand. Okay? And if one of those two families that are on either side of you go to worship regularly, raise your hand. And if neither of them on either side of you end up attending worship at least twice a month, would you raise your hand? Yeah, so honestly, that's not a big surprise to me, because in America today, there are 100 million people, adults, who rarely, if ever, attend a house of worship. Now, that's a lot of people, frankly. In fact, put them all in one country, and it would be the 11th largest country on the planet. Now, there's lots of reasons, as you certainly know, why people don't go to church. But do you know the biggest reason? The number one reason people don't go to church is they have never been invited. A survey of unchurched people in the greater Dallas area by Barna Group found that 75% of those polled, these are unchurched people, had never been invited to church. And of those people who have never been invited to church, what would happen if they were invited? According to this poll, 65% of them would likely try out church if they were brought there by a friend. Now, I want you to think about those two closest neighbors to you again. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands this time, but have you had an opportunity in the last 6 months or year to invite them to church? Because the survey that I just reported indicates if you had, one, maybe even two of them, both of them, would come if they had been invited. Now, I know what many of you are thinking. You're thinking, well, you know, I'm just not that sort of a person. I don't have that gift to do that kind of thing. I'm not a gregarious, outgoing kind of person. Or you may say, I don't really know my neighbor. So I understand all of those reservations. But the last few weeks, I've been making my way through the Gospels, and every time I have run across someone bringing someone else to meet Jesus, I've made a kind of a mark in my Bible. Now, I haven't gotten all the way through the Gospel of John yet, but I went back a few days previous to today and just counted the marks. And of the 40 episodes in the Gospels that record someone coming to meet Jesus, 34 of those were either brought to Jesus or Jesus was brought to them by a friend. In other words, 85% of the people who meet Jesus in the Gospels do so because they were brought to him by a friend. Even today, the vast majority of people who find their way to Jesus, who find their way to church, are brought to church brought to Jesus by a friend. In fact, studies say that between 75 and 85% of the people who try out church are there because somebody, a friend, brought them there. You see, friends bringing friends is by far the most common, the most effective, and the most biblical way people begin a relationship with Jesus and become involved in his church. And so this morning, what I want to do is I would like us to take a look at the very first person who did introductions and brought a friend, in this case, his brother, to meet Jesus. Now, the story that we're going to look at today begins with this fellow by the name of John the Baptizer, and he's been kind of roaming through the countryside, eating some very strange food, preaching fiery sermons, and baptizing people. And over the course of the months, he's attracted, frankly, quite a following. I don't think it was the diet of grasshoppers that did it. But as time goes on, people attach themselves to him and become a disciple of his. But right from the beginning, John makes it clear that it's not about him. He continues to talk about someone else, someone greater who will come after him, someone whose sandals he is not worthy to tie, someone who will take away the sins of the world. So one day, John and a couple of his disciples are out on the road when Jesus walks by, and John the Baptizer says, "There he is. That's the one, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." Now, it happened that one of those two disciples was a guy by the name of Andrew. We're not told the name of the other disciple, but most likely the other one was John, the writer of the Gospel of John. He doesn't name himself out of custom and probably humility. So look at what happens in verse 37 here. When the two disciples heard John say this, they followed Jesus. Now, apparently they were a little bit tentative because it seems like they were walking a number of feet behind Jesus here, and at some point, Jesus realizes that someone's following him, and so, verse 38, turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" Other translations have it, "What are you looking for?" Now, that's a pretty penetrating question. What are you looking for? Because that's a question not just for them, it's a question for us today. What are you looking for? What are you wondering about? What are you longing to experience or to be or to do or to become? Verse 38 at the end, they reply, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And what they were saying to Jesus was this: "Jesus, we want more than just a few minutes of your time, more than just a kind of a brief roadside conversation with you. We would like to spend some time with you. We don't want to just hear what you have to say in this public forum. We want some real time to sit down with you and to get to know who you are." And to their great surprise and delight, Jesus says, "Okay, come and you will see." Verse 39, so they went and saw where he was staying and spent that day with him. It was about 4 in the afternoon. Now, notice how much detail the gospel writer records here. The time of day, the fact that they met on the road, that Aramaic idiom called that was called rabbi. So this initial conversation and this initial encounter with Jesus had such a significant power that John remembers all the details of that moment he met Jesus in great clarity. Now, remember here, John, the gospel writer, is, well, he's writing this account decades after it happened, and yet, when he thinks about it, that first moment he met Jesus, he has this vivid recollection as if it happened yesterday. I mean, he remembers the slant of the afternoon sun on that road. He remembers the turn of Jesus' head as for the first time Jesus looked directly at him. He remembers the first words that Jesus spoke to the two of them. He remembers it all because it had such significance to him. That's what life-changing moments are like for us. We remember the details. I saw a poll some time ago on TV that said 90% of all Americans who were alive when the towers of the Twin Towers fell in New York, they remember, 90% of the people remember what they were doing when those towers fell. Life-changing moments are vivid in our imagination and our memories. I remember the first time that I met my wife. She was in this pink Hawaiian dress. She was sporting this Dorothy Hamill wedge haircut. And I will always remember that moment. It's burned into my memory because that's what significant moments are like. We remember these kind of things. And so it was with John here in this gospel. Verse 39, so they went and saw where Jesus was staying and spent that day with him. Now, we don't know what happened in that house that evening, but it had to have been a remarkable experience. I mean, these two had Jesus all to themselves. What did they talk about? What did Jesus have to say to them? I mean, did he explain maybe how all of the Old Testament pointed to him? Did they have a chance to ask him any question that they ever wanted? Have you ever had a conversation with someone that you were just dying to meet? Well, we're not told if they left late that night or stayed the night or left in the morning, but whatever it was, when they did leave, they were excited about this newfound relationship they had established with Jesus. In fact, let me suggest that's the first characteristic of friends who bring friends to meet Jesus. They are excited about their relationship with Jesus. People that bring friends to Jesus are so glad that he has been at work in their lives. They're thrilled to see what he wants to do in their lives. And because they're so excited about that relationship with Jesus, they want to share it with other people. Which leads me to another question. Are you excited about your relationship with Jesus? Or maybe I should ask a prior question. Have you begun a relationship with Jesus? Have you come to a moment in your life where you deliberately opened up your life and welcomed him into your life to forgive you your failures and to allow you to be led by him in a new way of living? See, at some point, everyone has to decide what they will do with Jesus. He asks each of us, what do you want? What are you looking for? And for many of us, that moment when we first met him is as vivid as it was for the gospel writer John here. We remember those details. I remember that evening that I was at a retreat in Kalamazoo and some friend had brought me and the speaker talked about what it's like to have a relationship with God. And I remember after that speech and talk, going out onto a frozen lake. There was a full moon in front of me. And I talked to God and asked him to be a part of my life. The question is, are you excited about your relationship with Jesus? Are you discovering new things about him, what he wants to do in your life? Are you building friendships with other believers in Jesus by being part of a group, maybe here at the church or some other event that helps you to grow in that relationship? See, the first step to being a friend who brings a friend to meet Jesus is to be excited about your own relationship with Jesus. If you're not doing that, or if your relationship with him has gotten stale, perhaps, figure out some ways to renew that, recharge that. Find avenues to renew it with maybe a Bible study or getting out there and serving people and learning to serve Jesus as you do. Well, after leaving the house where Jesus was staying, the first thing that Andrew does is he wants to tell somebody about this. And the first person that Andrew can think of to talk to them about this new friend he called, that he knew as Jesus, was his brother. Now, reaching out spiritually to people who are in your immediate family can sometimes be one of the hardest things of all. There's just something about the family dynamics, right? The sibling rivalry, who was mom's favorite. It's hard sometimes to have those kind of conversations. But apparently it wasn't a problem for Andrew and Simon. In fact, it turns out that they were pretty close. Not only were they fishing partners, they shared that business together, but they also shared a house together. They each had their own families, but they lived together in the same house. Now, I have a brother that I'm close to, that I, in fact, just saw last week, but I don't think I would want to share a house with him. But for Simon and for Andrew, it's not a problem. They are fishing partners, and they are housemates as well. And so after spending the previous evening with Jesus, the most natural thing in the world was to tell Simon, his brother, about Jesus. Look at verse 41. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon. And the phrase suggests it was the first thing in the morning. Maybe he found Simon at the kitchen table over a bowl of Wheaties, or maybe he caught up with him down at the shore fixing his net. But wherever it was that he found him, he said, "Simon, I have great news. We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." Now, don't miss the fact that this is how it begins. This is the first chapter of John's gospel. This is the first telling of what's happened with Jesus. And the first thing we're told about this whole person named Jesus is that other people who meet him are bringing their friends to him. And it's a pattern, by the way, friends bringing friends to meet Jesus. It's a pattern we're going to see throughout this Gospel of John. In fact, it's a pattern we're going to see in Andrew's life again and again. In John chapter 6, we read about how Jesus feeds 5,000. The crowd shows up to listen to Jesus, and after listening, they're hungry. And so Jesus challenges the disciples to feed them. "Come up with some food," he says, "for the crowd." Well, the disciples immediately begin to complain to each other. "He must have lost his mind." Chapter 6, verse 7, Philip answered that it would take more than a half year's wage to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Well, we can't feed all these mouths, Jesus. Send them away. Send them to Taco Bell, if you will. Verse 8. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many? See, while the rest of the disciples were whining and complaining and trying to calculate the cost of takeout for 5,000 people, Andrew, on the other hand, is outworking the crowd, looking for someone to bring to Jesus. And then, going on in chapter 12 of John's Gospel, some Greek people, seekers, come looking for Jesus. They say, "We want to see Jesus." Now, the disciples were Jewish folks. Jesus was Jewish. He was the Jewish Messiah. And as far as the disciples were concerned, Jesus had nothing to say to Gentile outsiders. But as they came to Philip, well, he didn't know what to do with these guys, so he instinctively turned to Andrew. And Andrew knew exactly what to do with these Greek seekers. He personally introduced them to Jesus. Look, verse 22. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. And so 3 times in John's Gospel, we hear the story of Andrew. And each of those 3 times, Andrew is mixing it up with people who don't yet know Jesus. Which, by the way, is a second characteristic of someone who makes introductions. They are always on the lookout for listening to people and talking to people who don't yet know him. They are on the lookout for others who don't know Jesus. Now, that might seem rather obvious, but the truth is that one of the reasons many of us don't bring friends to Jesus is we don't really have too many friends who don't know Jesus. Most of our time is centered around the life of the church or other Christians that we're close to. And little by little by little, we are getting so isolated from people who don't know about him that we can't bring others to him. I mean, one of the reasons that maybe you haven't invited a next door neighbor to church is you haven't taken the time to get to know your next door neighbor. So we all know the name Billy Graham, who was undoubtedly the most well-known and well-loved evangelist of our generation. And at the end of each of his famous crusades, people attending would be invited to come forward and to receive Christ and his forgiveness. So to prepare people for that invitation, before the event happened, the local counselors would be trained and they would be encouraged to bring a friend to one of the crusades. Well, during one of these training periods for the crusade, a staff person who was overseeing the crusade felt a tug on the back of his coat after the training and turned around to see this small, elderly woman who said, "I'm in my 80s. I've been in the church all my life. I don't have anyone to bring to the crusade." And the staff person said, "Well, just start looking around and ask God to open your eyes to someone you could bring." Well, a couple days later, on the night of the crusade, after Billy Graham had the invitation for people to come forward, that same follow-up counselor felt somebody tugging on the back of his coat. He turned around, and there was that elderly woman. And she said, "Usually I go to the grocery store about once a month, frankly. But for the last 2 weeks, I've gone there every day, and every day I've gone to the same cashier. And she's right over there asking Christ to be the person that forgives her of her sins and receive him." Well, 2 nights later, that same staff person was again overseeing the follow-up for the crusade, and he felt a tug on the back of his coat again. Guess who it was? She said, "How do I look?" Now, that's always a dangerous question for a guy to answer well. But she went on to say, "I've been to the beauty parlor twice this week, went to the same stylist both times, and she's right over there receiving Christ." But see, that's how it is for people like Andrew. They are always on the lookout for someone who just might have some spiritual interest, who just might be open to an invitation. And so every day, as we go through our lives, we rub shoulders with people. And the survey reminds us that 75% of people who you would invite to church just might come if you offer to bring them. Well, there's a third characteristic of people like Andrew. Not only are they excited about the relationship with Jesus, not only are they on the lookout for people who don't know him, but they are personally willing to make that introduction and to bring those two people together. I mean, notice what we read here in verse 42. This is John 1 again. "And Andrew brought Simon to Jesus." He didn't just pray for Simon, "Lord, open his eyes to see the truth of who you are." He didn't just tell Simon, "Simon, we've found the Messiah." He said that, but he went further. He didn't just send Simon, "Simon, you got to go see this guy preach." He brought Simon. He personally accompanied him. "Simon, finish up your cereal. We're going to go and meet Jesus." And that's what Simon does each of these 3 times in the Gospel of John. He personally brings people to Jesus, to the little boy with the 5 loaves and 2 fish. He didn't say, "Give me your lunch." He said, "Come with me. There's someone I want you to meet." To those Greeks, seekers, he didn't just give them permission. "Yes, you may see Jesus." He personally went to Jesus on their behalf. See, in each episode, Andrew gets personally involved, and that's the power of that word, bring. Bring is more than telling, it's more than sending, it's more than praying, it's more than pointing. You know, if someone tells you about a great new restaurant in Lodo, say, you may or may not actually get to it. But if they say to you, "I'm coming over to your place Friday night at 6, and I'm going to take you there." People crave for connections. I mean, life as we see it today is so frantic and relationships get so fragmented, your friends long for meaningful relationships with people. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted a friend to meet Jesus, you just gave them some information, maybe explain the message of God's love and Christ's death. But that's generally not enough for people today. They still need information in order to make an intelligent decision. But before they hear that information, they need a relationship through which that message will come to them. In fact, one expert tells us that the average unchurched person needs 7 contacts with a genuine believer before they're ready to make a decision about Christ themselves. For many people, because church is so foreign to them, the idea of stepping into a place like this on Sunday morning feels like going into a whole new world. For one of my wife's graduate classes, we had to have a multicultural experience. And so we decided the easiest one would be to just slip into the local synagogue down by our house, sit in the back, observe, and slip out. So we got there to discover that it wasn't like here where everybody's looking up front. The chairs were arranged in a small, intimate circle. And there were 15 people, including us, around that circle. And we really couldn't blend in because we didn't have a clue what we were supposed to do. Sometimes they would say something in Hebrew and we'd kind of mutter along. And once I remember them turning to some artifact on the wall and bowing in reverence. And we tried to figure it all out, but we didn't know what was going on. And that's often what it's like for someone to come to church for the very first time. They're not comfortable with it. They don't know what's going to happen. But if someone brings them and sits with them and helps them to understand what's going on so they don't feel out of place, they don't feel embarrassed about being there. If you sit with them and show them, that's a difference that can be huge. And that's, by the way, the third way that friends bring friends to meet Jesus. They are willing to personally do the invitation. Well, there's one final characteristic I'll suggest of people who bring friends to Jesus. And that is they leave the outcome to God. See, in all three of these stories about Andrew making introductions, once he's made the introduction, well, he just gets out of the way. It's not his responsibility to persuade his brother Simon that Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus can handle that all by himself. It's not his job to take that lunch and feed 5,000 people with it. He leaves that lunch in Jesus' hands. He doesn't need to give a theological explanation to those Greeks in John 12. Jesus is going to do that. See, Andrew understands that each of these people had to deal with Jesus. He couldn't do it for them. His responsibility was simply to make the introduction and get out of the way. So you don't need to have an outgoing personality or the gift of evangelism or be able to answer every difficult question somebody might ask about God. You just have to be willing to bring them to that place where they can decide what they're going to do with Jesus. It's not about you. It's about him. All you have to do is bring them so they can decide what they want to do. And so the fourth thing that friends who bring friends to meet Jesus do is they leave the outcome to God. Leave the outcome to God. Because Jesus wants to meet everyone that's willing to come. Which brings us to the communion table this morning. Because this is an invitation for you to meet Jesus here. In this bread, in this cup, we are reminded that Jesus is present with us, that he comes to us personally, individually, and corporately. And so just in a moment, I will issue an invitation to you, to invite you to come and meet Jesus in this sacrament, to allow the bread and the cup to be means by which you encounter this living one. The bread reminds us of his body and the cup, his blood. It centers around the reality that the first thing we need from Jesus is the forgiveness that his death on the cross provides. But to do that, you have to come. You have to meet Jesus. And that's what I hope you will do today. Because it was on the night in which our Lord Jesus was betrayed,